Well, good morning, everyone. We're going to spend a little bit of time getting this down to where the rubber hits the road in a really pragmatic way. So we've heard some of the education agendas for how we get the workforce trained, clarification about how do we talk about informatics. And I want to spend a little bit of time talking about how we've actually done some of the training, what we've attempted to accomplish by using an integrated approach to leadership development and informatics within our specific division. So this is a little bit of a case study, and it's leveraging very specifically principles, went a little too fast there, principles around leadership development, how the training and techniques work, and what we have successfully accomplished and where some of the opportunities remain. So as we think in particular now, is there's a lot of change going on within CDC, and my guess is most of you who have worked in nonprofit organizations or private sector companies have experienced the routine organizational change that goes on as we attempt to figure out how do we get this right. And so CDC, again, is trying to figure out how do we get this right in whatever right means at the time. And that tends to happen most effectively when we have leaders who are able to be performance-driven, who are innovative, who are very mission-oriented, and also team-focused. Ideally, they're also confident. And there are a couple leaders in this room today who you've heard on the plenaries, you've seen giving other presentations, who really embody these core aspects. So how do we engender those aspects in the staff, in the folks that we are growing in the field of informatics? So what did we do? We followed some very specific principles, and this is a framework to be applied. We tried to take an integrated approach to how we cut across what are the various activities and functions that our division tries to accomplish, base it on competencies, so you've heard from Laura very specific information about the informatics workforce competencies, focus on both individuals in the organization, try to make sure that it's continual, so it's not a one-time shot in the arm, it's a routine process, and ideally, although it's very tough to do in the informatics field, draw from a robust talent pool. I'm going to highlight a few of the benefits here. You can read most of what's on the screen, but two areas that I think are critically important right now is redefining what are the required leadership skills. How do we align what it is that we need to be doing to where the agency or the organization is going? How do we align our competencies to the priorities? So when we think about informatics competencies, what are those, and how do we look at where the agency is going right now? So we heard from Dr. Frieden, there's some key things, epidemiology and surveillance. Partnership and support to state and local public health partners, having a global view, and of course, H1N1 and the realities of the policy situation. How do we look at those competencies, figure out what our workforce needs, and provide training, education opportunities that are practical and pragmatic so that we can stay abreast of what's going on? Furthermore, as change happens, it's critically important to maintain accountability. What is it that we're doing? How are we doing it? And being in the public sector, how are we accounting for the public funds that we are using to accomplish these goals? So this is the framework. In order to have the integrated approach, we leverage trainings, tools, techniques. We look at the competency building blocks. And then ideally, we link it then to succession planning. Where do we go from here? How does the workforce continue to grow? Let me spend a quick moment talking about some of the training tools and techniques that we used within our division. So you can see some of the core aspects, what are the techniques, and so a few that I'll highlight, coaching and mentoring. One of the things under the division leadership that was imperative that we as leaders created, or we who are in the leadership role, senior management role, do, is have an open door policy to be able to meet frequently, often and specifically with individuals on our team so that we can identify what their needs are, provide them with ongoing specific feedback, and keep that process going. So again, it's not a one-time thing. So an example from myself personally, I have a weekly meeting with one of our very junior staff members who's new to informatics, new to the field, grew up in the business services side of the house, and needs to learn what is it that we do. So ongoing review of work, ongoing coaching, being able to provide very specific feedback after a meeting has happened, after a presentation has occurred that's within our staff, after a deliverable has been completed, is invaluable to helping that specific team member grow. That is an expectation that has been set at the top. Another area that we have actively supported is what we'll all call experimental learning. So you don't get a free ride in our division. You're expected to step up to the plate routinely, and we provide a safe environment for that experiment to happen, where we give presentations routinely to our fellow staff. We have brown bags. We have different opportunity areas for that. We encourage different team members to rotate through doing the facilitation of our team meetings, as well as being the note-taker responsibilities. So there are different aspects to thinking about. How do I do this work? How do I listen attentively? How do I practice that competency of being in charge to facilitate, to make sure we achieve the objective of the meeting, to being the attentive listener so that I capture what's important so that the team stays on the same page week after week, month after month, so that we achieve the deliverables that we're trying to achieve. There are a couple other areas that our division has focused on in really thinking about the competencies. In the informatics workforce, one of the key areas is successful project management. For those of us who've grown up in public health, or in my instance, health policy, we learned a lot about analysis, the importance of data, how we acquire that, having our methods solid, doing clear analysis, and presenting key recommendations. What we missed along the way is, how do you run a project successfully? How do we drive to a deliverable? How do we make sure that we achieve what we set out, we promised to achieve, and start learning some of that language that fits a little bit with that public health approach, with that health policy approach, but it's a different term. So one of the things our division did, again, very practical, very pragmatic, is we invested program funds to run our entire staff through Project Management 101. For those who were more experienced and had more responsibilities, we then took them through what I'll call Project Management 201. How do you do this? How do we practice it? And then that became a standard for how we do our work. So it was taking that training and then applying it real time, real world, on an ongoing basis to what we expect to see our staff doing. So it becomes part of the norm. It embeds itself into the organization. Furthermore, we encourage all of our team members, whether they are currently in lead positions or not, to enroll in what CDC University calls its Team Lead Certificate Program. So across the grades, because this is the idea that we want to grow people into the areas of leadership that they need so that they can then become, they can move up to that level, or for those who are already in that level to refine those skills and then take themselves to the next level. We did this by doing some of the analysis against the competencies. What does our team need to do? What do our teams need to do specifically? What does informatics need to do specifically? And then also try to target in individual conversations, where does that individual need to grow? CDC has a specific program we call an individual development plan, and we provide learning accounts. Every year, CDC provides $1,000 to all of its staff. That $1,000 then is invested in workforce training. In our division, we have a very intentional, systematic review so that all of our staff people must present to us what they want to do, and we look at what competency do they need to develop, and how do we recommend and support the use of those funds to advance their individual practice. That looks pretty blurry from this side. These will be available, all the presentations are available. The idea really here is, if we think, again, in the public health workforce, and in the reality in the public sector, that we're facing a wave of retirement. So one of the key areas in the President's management agenda is to really look at, how do we continue to gain organizational efficiency? How do we continue to achieve our objectives while we know that we're about to be severely affected by the retirement wave? So in our particular division, one of the things that we've done is look at, who are the folks that may be new to the organization, or they're new to our area, new to informatics? So currently they're in the low potential, but through training and practice, they gain ability, and we can have some moderate increases in the overall performance. And then for those where we can see some large change, the real potential is there, we can see engagement in what they're trying to accomplish, and they have aspiration for leadership. We do very targeted efforts with those individuals to move them from being wanting to do something to the ability to do something. We'll send them to select conferences. We might use program funds to do that if the specific training funds are no longer available, so they have specific exposure. We ask them then to bring that information back to share that with their team. We will have other opportunities where we can look at some of the other experiences that are available, have them lead specific projects, and give them opportunity areas with safety nets so that they can go from being a team lead or a team participant to having a supervisory function as well as then leading programs. So moving them from having individual projects to now having a suite of projects that they are then responsible for delivering, as well as a team, some team of both FTEs, CDC employees, as well as contractors, to really add to that complexity. The division leadership is still there to support, to encourage, to help mitigate when necessary, but to have those people really step up because they've shown engagement and they have clear aspiration for moving into leadership, that enables the division that as we go through this organizational change to have some succession ability in place so that the good work that's going on does not get lost in transition. So I've identified quite a few of these in talking about the success stories. Another one I'll highlight is very specifically, we have a technical assistance team. What that team does is provide one-on-one technical assistance to primarily the beneficiaries of the preparedness emergency response grants, where there is a specific FIN component. On this team in particular, because of some of the training they've gone through and because of the environment that encourages this ongoing learning, they have decided on their teams to start documenting very clearly what their processes are, linking them to the specific competencies that they need to have on their team, which include project officer roles, and presenting that back to each other, in times also pairing with each other to learn, well, what are the challenges you have with this particular area? How do I learn from that? What are the job aids or job training opportunities that then emerge from that so that we can move this whole team forward so that the whole team is able to provide better, consistent, improved technical assistance to our public health partners for whom we are responsible. So what are some of the keys? You've heard some very specific information. You've heard a little bit of some of the stories. And I'm going to wrap up with this slide, that the division made a conscious choice to be dedicated to this, dedicated as individuals and dedicated as an organization to thinking about how do we get pragmatic on the ground? What is it that we do? We rose to the challenge, thinking about there have to be ways to improve. So we were willing to take an open look at ourselves and say, where are we weak? How do we understand that? How can we use a systematic process? Is there a standard to measure against so we know where we're at and can move forward? We made investment. It is time and it's money. And it's leveraging some of those program funds to do that type of training. And it's actually relatively modest when we think about it in comparison. And then finally, the ongoing commitment that leadership is an important aspect to us growing the team to merge from some of the low-level initials all the way up through becoming those who will take on the leadership roles as the organization changes to the future of where public health informatics will sit. And with that, I will close and open up for conversation and question across all of us.
The audience is welcome to ask the panel questions. Sir, in the back.
Yes, I'm the local health officer in Westchester County, just north of New York City. And I think I'm the only local health officer that I've met so far here at this conference, even though it's co-sponsored by NACHO. And I was particularly eager to hear this session because I think public health informatics does need to be promoted more. So I heard some definitions of public health informatics. I heard what needs to be done for the workforce. I heard some names of health departments that have public health informatics offices. But I think, and as I looked at the other sessions throughout this program, they're mostly technical. And they're about this kind of getting down into the weeds on how these things are working. And so I offer to you, I see the leadership of the Public Health Informatics Office at CDC, a suggestion, which is that you need to make a more compelling case. You have to give some, not examples of health departments that have informatics programs, but maybe tying it to the 10 essential services. You have to speak to the people who are policy leaders and health department directors who are practicing public health. Because so far in a day and a half, I haven't really gotten anything that I can take home that maybe we have a fairly robust public health informatics activity in our health department, our a priority of this administration. But the technical level stuff, a lot of it has gone right over me. And I just don't really. I've heard a lot of high level policy stuff and very kind of practical technical stuff. But this middle ground of what's cracked for those of us who are not public health informaticians, but public health practitioners, this effort to connect to us. I'm just saying to you, I need something that speaks more in my language because I'm eager to do this. I'm also, you mentioned AMIA, and I'm actually on the board, I'm a physician, and I'm on the board of the American Board of Preventive Medicine. And we were approached at our last board meeting by AMIA to develop the formal certification for physicians in medical informatics. And that one slide that you showed, cellular, organ, patient, community, we saw that slide in the presentation. So I'm very interested in this. I just offer this as a kind of a friendly feedback. I'm not feeling connected. I'm not feeling the love.
If the panel would like to address the comment.
I just wanted to mention, you're very right in that there are many messages, and there are many audiences, too. So in this room, there's some technical people, there's some policy people, there's some, what you say, kind of in the middle people, there's people from other perspectives, and it is, that's why, you know, this elevator speeches sometimes are difficult, because they need to be so targeted to very specific audiences in the elevator. I mean, you're right. There needs to be more messages to more diverse audiences. And that is one of the expectations that we have, is to be able to almost translate the language in technical terms to policymakers, translate the policy language into some of the technical terms. But most importantly, I think what you mentioned about connecting the term and the definition and the scope of practice of public health informatics with the various activities in the everyday public health work is very, very critical. So I take the comment, you know, very, very well, and I think it's one of the things that we will need to do.
I was just going to thank you for your comment, and I agree with your sentiments also in knowing my boss and comments, Lynn. But I also wanted to mention, I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but in Lynn's division, there's also a communications department, which Laura Desar, moderator, is the team lead for, and they put out a quarterly newsletter called Fin News. And I would say that that's something that's not highly technical, and it's an overview of activities, or just you can comment on it. So that might be something you can look at archive newsletters and sign up if you want them delivered. And then our other colleague is Mamie Jennings right there, who oversees community practice, which is also very grassroots within public health informatics.
I would just like to say in response also that this was a discussion that we started with Ms. Valerie Rogers from NACHO and PHII to talk about putting together perhaps a series of communication documents that would help to communicate to that specific middle group. So I would welcome you to be part of that to help us really identify how to speak in the language of those folks. So maybe we can chat afterwards. Please.
Regarding Walter's comments and thoughts about strategy, but it provoked in me the question that I was hoping you were going to ask, Walter. So I'll ask a question for you to the audience. Those of you who are in either state or local public health practice, how many of you have gone to be involved in either an emerging health information exchange or discussion about that, or in other ways, having an active dialogue with the healthcare delivery sector of your community to understand what public health agency is either going to have to do to advance changes in healthcare in the community, or the reverse, or what they're doing that's going to impact how you run your business.
So how many, first of all, how many people are from state and local health? And then keep your hand up if you've done any of those.
Okay. Yeah. So I think what Walter's strategy was provoking me to say, I mean, your bottom line to your presentation was about getting out there and getting involved. I think that's something that, from my perception, watching through the last number of years around the country, that we don't see enough of. I'm a commissioner on the Certification Commission for Healthcare IT. One of the things I'm concerned about is injecting the public health need into the overall certification requirements for electronic health records. repeatedly asked colleagues at CDC and other places, how many of you are willing to either volunteer your time to be a part of a work group? I'm in a position to urge that we have a work group about public health need so that it injects that advice into shaping what kind of health record systems look like in the future. But before I'll raise my hand and say, let's do it, I need to know, are there any people that are going to actually take the time to be a part of such work group? Industry pays their people well, and they pay them to be there. That is not the case in public health. I wish it were, but it's not.
And you hit it. Nail the head. No. Why do Kaiser pay me to go to Pittsburgh? Why do Siemens or and Kaiser and Siemens are not. I mean, Kaiser is a provider system, Siemens a vendor, but just like a provider system, a vendor, any other group that sends people to this meeting, because they see a business reason to do it. They realize, they believe that what they are doing internally needs to influence. That's the reality. It needs to influence the decisions around something. Now, what I'm trying to do when I represent Kaiser at these meetings is, you know, present the business reason why we have things done in a way. And that's what all these discussions in the standard world, you know, are done. That's the kind of language, that's the kind of discussions that are taking place to define what is the business reason why you need to do this or use this, and to evaluate what is the best standard to meet those business needs. And there's fights about the standard doesn't need it, and so, but that's the best one right now, so if you need to change it, go to the standard body, because we're not to change the standard. The standard has, someone does it, and go there and then modify the standard. And over the years, there's been changes to adjust to the different needs. But it does take that. It does take someone, some company, some organization to say, we need to devote some person's time to go and speak what we need to say and to make sure that our business needs are represented. And I, like Dave, I've been involved in a number of these groups, and the number of people that represent public health are very, very limited. We in HITSBI, in the Health Information Technology Standards Panel, we created a specific group focusing on population health and defining the, analyzing the use cases, what's called the use cases or the applications, where there needs to be interoperability exchanges that apply specifically to public health, so biosurveillance, immunization, public health reporting, and when you see around the table the number of people that represent public health that actually not only have worked in public health, understand public health at least from what their experience has been, and then can speak the technical language that needs to be spoken in these meetings, is, you know, counted with a single hand. So it is, so now we need to find the mechanism to ensure that individuals inside agency, local and public health, receive the support and the training to understand and be able to speak this language, and the support to do that work, to spend a day or two in these meetings, or an hour or two in these conference calls every week, to do that, because we need those two things, to train them and to then find a way to support them, whether it's inside the organization or through other funding or both.
Yes.
I was thinking, you know, why, okay, I was in Utah before, I'm in New Mexico now, so I'm thinking about the New Mexico State Health Department, and we have two people here, and one of them, me, only because of the assessment initiative required that I be here, or they would not allow me to go. So what do I need to do? I'd love to have a voice in this. But I'm, first of all, not only am I not rewarded for doing it, I'm really not allowed.
No, I'm from Illinois. I'm taking vacation time.
Yeah, I hear you. So I'm thinking we need to
I have so many other things too. I'm at the very local level, but it's a deliverable. It's required. I can't get my grant funding to facilitate my office if I don't do some of these things. So I guess that part of the answer is it, make it a deliverable, make it a requirement, and that will answer some of that.
That's why I'm here.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Right? Because when I applied to this conference, they asked me, is it a deliverable? That's a very good point.
You know what they say, as long as we're doing our job correctly, nobody knows about it. Something goes wrong.
I have a question. I think that communities of practice done well do create involvement in a lot of shared learning. I have a question that I'd like to ask you all. Show me. How many of you listen at all to the NPR radio show on the weekends, Car Talk?
I have.
I have COVID. How many have ever listened to it? I don't know, what's that, half the audience?
More.
How many of you are mechanics? No, right? Would a format like, imagine the stuff about it.
That's just what I was talking about.
That's going to be entertaining, it's going to be...
Doesn't even have to be entertaining.
I think it needs to be somewhat entertaining. And radio, I say, is one way. Almost everybody can get access to that.
Or webcast or something.
Right? And you can learn, right? And you can speak at a level that lots of people can learn. I mean, I always marvel because my wife, I'm a gearhead, and my wife absolutely is not. She loves that show. Why? Well, because it weaves in a number of different elements, and she learns, and she's guessing. I think it's the brake caliper. She wouldn't know brake caliper from a wheel. But I think we need to be pushing our communities of practice thinking, Josh, when you spoke up earlier, I think a community that certainly could be oriented is the health official, and understanding what do they really need, what are their questions, right? Your questions are different than maybe some of your staff. The epidemiologist in your department who has to help gather flu data from the emergency department may have some specific questions that you don't particularly want to answer, think about.
Right. She has to ask those in order for her to be able to answer.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So it's a different group to have a dialogue with. But I think we need to look at those strata a little bit more in the overall community of practice strategy. And I think we need forums. And I use Car Talk because I've had this idea for years. My staff at the Informatics Institute has repeatedly shot me down on this. Because they think we've got enough on our hands, we're not going into the radio show business. But I really think that kind of interactive, fun, and constant. I mean, it's where you are busy, but maybe today I could dial in. You know, tomorrow maybe not. Maybe
or the podcast.
Or the podcast. Right. So it's on demand.
They to get up radio and go. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we do radio over the web. I mean, there's some benefit too of being able to be bidirectional, so people can ask a question, you can have fun with it. But I think we are collectively, the price point of getting into that game has dropped so much, and there's enough sophistication that almost if you play to the crudeness of it, I mean, just doing it not very well actually becomes an attractive kind of thing. You know, watch amateurs try to do it.
We have, I think, what we.
I have two comments to that. One is a plug for the Nature of Informatics Recruit is actually here. So there are a number of local health officials who are wondering about who we are very good freedom to help with. Second is Rachel and Ellen.
We have a question here in the front. Please.
Thank you. start with the technology. We had a community project that everyone had buy-in into, from the government level down to the provider level to our tiniest volunteer to our largest SQHC, that had everything to do with not only financial outcomes and how can we be more efficient, how can we provide more better care, how can we link people to their medical home, that we feel that as a community that we can show very, very quick return on investment because we'll be solving our community problems with this technology. So we have the buying point. So the business case and the link to what is going to be meaningful to the middlemen is going to depend upon why they're doing this. What relevance does it have to your own community? And I look at some of these huge state projects and wish that we had that going on here in Georgia, but also realize that if it were, it may not apply to us at home. It may not be the thing that brings our community together and brings our providers together, which we're very, very fortunate to have them. And we're already working on our next level, which is we are teaming with business leaders in the community to put together a common message and a community dashboard. It's selecting out the possibly 4 to 5 indicators that public health, the business leaders, the community can put together. What are the 4 things that everybody wants to look at and track and have the same message about across all different age groups, across different providers and things like that? So that's the next level that we're growing on top of that. So, you know, I think people will volunteer and will come as long as they're linked by a common thing that they're working on together, not just the technology for technology's sake, and this is all really cool, and there's money at the federal level, maybe some of them trickle down, but, you know, why are we doing this? And you spoke to me specifically yesterday and said, yeah, we're on the right track. We have a specific outcome that we're looking to solve with our HIV.
Thank you so much. Oh, one very quick closing comment.
Very quick. I just want to put in a plug for a platform that's available now that PHII has created. It's called PH Connect. It's a platform for public health informatics professionals to get on and to start creating communities and start having those conversations. So, for example, you could get on that platform, create a community on the platform, and start having this conversation. And that might be the beginning of some conversation that would lead to a community of practice, for example. If you're interested in that, follow me downstairs to the exhibit area. I'm going down to booth 401 to do demonstrations of that. If you would like to see, again, it's open to all public health and informatics professionals. phconnect.org. You don't need you create your own password. It's very easy to get on. All of our STEM communities have their community spaces there, and so you can join those as well. Thank you.
And that will be where Dave does STEM talk.
Thank you all so much for your time today.